tip today in association with Slattery's of Pecan, your main Peugeot dealer for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
And you're very welcome back to Tip Today. We're live from Pier Street in Nenagh today. Des was on to say, Fran, you spoke to Jackie Cahill about the Irish Water refunds to people who overpaid. Is that the same Jackie Cahill of Fianna Fáil who has a confidence and supply agreement with the government? Says Des. Well, I suppose if they didn't bring down the government on the Francis Fitzgerald email controversy, they're hardly going to bring down the government based on the some issues within Irish Water, but there you are, 1800 938 007. Now, on a much happier note here at Tip FM, we remain completely overwhelmed and very proud of the huge response that we received for our toy appeal, with thousands of toys being donated. And you can see exactly how much was donated if you go to our Facebook page, or indeed the website, and see the video that we shot this week showing what was received by you, the people of Tipperary, or indeed from you, the people of Tipperary. I'm joined on the line now by National President of St. Vincent de Paul Tipperary man, Kieran Stafford. Good morning to you, Kieran.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
I'm very well indeed, and good to talk to you today. We were overwhelmed with the response. I'm sure you were as well, Kieran.
Absolutely. Just to kind of put the whole thing in context, this year we didn't have a national partner for a toy appeal, you know, nationally. So we were set to lose out really in Tipperary as well as everywhere else in relation to toys that would come in that we could pass on to families that need them. So we were so delighted when you announced, TIFFM announced that they were going to do a Tipperary toy appeal. So this will make a huge difference for families in Tipperary that we visit and support. So thank you sincerely for this campaign, which has been enormously successful. Thank you.
Well, it's to the people of Tipperary who just showed their generosity once again. It's a very busy time for you, Kieran, as you told us before. There's a lot of, I mean, in fact, we'll be speaking about it very soon on our Friday panel, you know, about the so-called growth that's out there. But there's a lot of people not being carried along with this growth and this upturn in the economy.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not just us that are saying it. Official reports that have come out have vindicated what we have been saying all along, which is that, number one, people in rural areas suffered the most during the recessionary years and are in the group that are recovering the slowest. On top of that, the social welfare changes that were made during the previous government in relation to single family parents, it has been proved, and this was a report that was commissioned by the department themselves, has proved that it has actually made them more vulnerable to become end up in poverty, and has actually not achieved exactly what it set out to do, which was to empower people more and to provide them with a better chance of a better income.
That's amazing to know. In terms of people making contact with St. Vincent de Paul, I mean, is it a case that you go to your local members for help? Is that it?
There's a number of different ways to contact us, and I want to take this opportunity to appeal to anybody who's struggling, even at this later stage. Please get in contact with us, and please let us know that you need help, and we will visit you, and we will do our best to help you in whatever way that we can. You can help us through our website, which is svp.ie. You can contact our members locally, and most people would know how to contact our members locally. They would either have, you know, a shop or an office, maybe through the local parish church. Mm. You know, citizens' advice. There's a number of different ways, but if you can't access any of these, if you go to our website, it shows you our contact offices in the 8 regions around the country. And if you contact them through message or email, your call will be passed on, and you will get a visit from us.
Is there a particular criteria, Kieran? How does that work?
No. There's absolutely no criteria. If you're in need, if you're in difficulty, whether you're working, whether you're not. Just come to us, tell us what your difficulty is, and we'll sit down with you and we'll do what we can to help you.
All right. Well, listen, really good to talk to you today, and a happy Christmas to you and everybody you represent, Kieran. Thank you.
And Fran, just before you go, I just want to say a special word of thanks to the public who contributed so generously to the toy appeal and contributed to our national appeal this time of year. Our appeal is going well. the public, as per usual, are being generous as ever. So we really do appreciate that, and we thank the public. We thank all of the businesses and everybody that has supported us, and that help will go into people in everybody's communities. So it's all good. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, Kieran, and a happy Christmas to you. That is the president of St. Vincent de Paul. That's Kieran Stafford, who is himself a Tipperary man. 1800 938 007. Now, our Friday panel is on the way. I'm looking forward to introducing them to you, and we'll be looking at several different topics over the next while. The whole business of economic growth, you know, is it happening out there? Is it visible, particularly in rural areas like Tipperary? We'll also be talking about, I suppose, posing the question, should the state provide life-saving medication regardless of the cost? And that will have come up on the programme during the week when we spoke to Marion Kelly's daughter, Aideen, about the passing of her mum. And also posing the question, is the day of the Good Samaritan dead and gone? So there are topics, and we'd love if you'd get involved in our discussions. That's 1800 938 007 is the free phone number. And you can text on 083 311 3311. It's just coming up on 10 past 11. We're live from Nina today.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
And you're very welcome back to TIP today, 1800-938-007. You can text on 083-311-3311. Now, we have two out of three of our panel with us, and I know that Helen will be joining us in a few moments' time. And in fact, she just opened the door there, and she banged the door as well, just for atmosphere. You can't beat it. But joining me so far is Peter Ward of Country Choice in Nina, and sports editor with The Guardian, Shane Brophy, is with me as well. But good morning to you both, and how are you? Can I turn to you first, Peter, because we're going to discuss the whole business of economic growth and infrastructure and all of that. And is it visible to you? Is there growth out there? Is it? Are there more people spending in Country Choice? What's happening?
Well, I definitely see in the milk market in Limerick, I can see the city of Limerick has definitely a pickup in traffic, and students have more part-time jobs. That's quite a reality. And businesses are advertising for staff, so there is a pickup. Nina, look, anything is better than roadworks. End of story. Right. Anything is better than roadworks. Our streets look good. Definitely Kenya Street looks like the Champs-Élysées at night with the trees. I've never seen it looking so well. The Market Cross with Breda Fitzgibbons Jewellers looks absolutely spectacular. Is there growth? Is there long-term growth? We're not seeing a huge amount of buoyancy yet in business in town, but there's certainly a feel-good factor. The issue really was, for us, we were doing grand, we came out of the recession reasonably well, the town came out intact out of the recession, and then nobody estimated the powerful impact of the roadworks. I suppose there was all sorts of studies done on it, from environmental studies and archaeological studies, but nobody took the time to see what would the industrial or the economic impact
and
on it.
And what was that impact?
The impact for us was very much huge. To be terribly honest with you, we did have to restructure, and we did have to speak to our very good bankers on the corner, and they did help us. We didn't know what it was going to be. Absolutely not. It was very long. I think we had most of the summer of last year, we had no access to Kenyon Street at our tourist season. And that was kind of different. While there were pickup happening around the country, those were factors that influenced the pickup in Nina. Signage, what I call pop-up excavations on the periphery of the town, were caused a major problem for us.
Yeah.
But you know, look, I suppose it's time to say that for the moment that's behind us. The street in Kenyon Street looks like a runway in Shannon Airport. It's beautiful. The parking is good. It's free in the railway. That was always a big benefit to us. The town looks good. I was very proud. I was very excited the night the lights were turned on. It's Christmas number 35 for me down there in Kenyon Street with my wife. And, you know, we were rattled to the core by the roadworks. But definitely we're a bit more hopeful this Christmas.
One of the issues, I suppose, is habits, and people get into the habits of shopping here or there. If those habits are changed, it's hard to get them back again.
Yeah.
And their habits may have been changed because of
There's no doubt about it. Habits changed. I suppose the biggest social thing we do now is attend funerals and meet people in queues and they say, oh, I'm so sorry, I haven't been downtown for months. A lovely lady in yesterday said, you know what? She said, it's 10 months since I came down the town. I'm back for you for Christmas. And I said, you're so, so welcome. And it's so lovely to see you. And I understand why you didn't come down. But the reality is, I have never seen the shops looking so beautiful.
Shane, your thoughts on this? When you look around the town, is there growth? Are things improving?
I'd agree with a lot of what Peter had to say there. Like, there's no doubt about it. Like the recession hit everybody hard, but I thought Nina pretty much held its own. I suppose we're well situated between guts of an hour and a half from the outskirts of Dublin. We're what, a quick jaunt in from Limerick. So there are certain attractions to what Nina has to offer. I suppose going forward, I suppose the last 2 years probably has been signified by the roadworks. But like, I think going forward, the town is going to thrive from that. I don't know, the business owners in the centre of town have suffered greatly. But I think going forward, the town can only build from this.
Yes, and of course, jobs promised for the next year or so, possibly.
Yeah, like first year. That, it looks like March, April is going to come on stream. But I suppose the big elephant in the room will be the impact of Coty when they shut their doors. Because as we know at the moment, there is no anchor tenant to go into that huge industrial estate out there. What's going to happen when all those jobs go? Hopefully, maybe over the next 12 months, something might be able to land in there, but as it stands.
And certainly the infrastructure will make Nina a more attractive prospect for people coming into the town. Is that fair to say?
I think I'd like to think it would. We've got the gas. So for business, we've got the gas in, which is massive. It will hopefully reduce costs for a lot of the business. We have wastewater treatment in. So, there's a lot of good, I suppose, from now. And I suppose the next stage will be, I suppose, to put a decent plan in place. Like, we had a lot of development, a lot of estates went up over the last 15 to 20 years, like, all around the area. Some of them are unfinished, including my own, where I live out in Stream. There's a lot of possibility. But you'd like to see a small bit more joined up thinking in terms of how we can link all these together going forward.
Right. Of course, the traffic plan, I suppose, is the next thing that they're going to try out, and that would be interesting. Somebody saying the road down by Lidl on the Dublin Road is still only half done.
The way you try to check these roads, if you put your bottle recycling in the back of your van and you drive along, and if you get ding-a-ling-a-ling the whole way in, you know the road is bad. And you get a lot of ding-a-ling around Lidl and on the Dublin Road. That's what I noticed myself. But look, the core areas are looking good. I'd be hopeful that we're at the end of the project, more hopeful than I was at the beginning, that we will be able to come out of this. And definitely what Shane said, it's a great town to be in. Okay, there are no houses in it and things like that for the future for people. But it's a great town to be in, and it's definitely a great town to rear children and young families, and a great town to spend time in. So I think for me in the independent business sector, there's no doubt about it. I think we've probably the best independent business sector in the county, and maybe in Munster, in the town centre, with phenomenal choice in food, cafes, lifestyles, fashion. That will benefit us, because people if they want to live in a town, they like nice places to go on a Saturday, and they like choice on the streets.
We let you catch your breath there for a moment, Helen. Put your other hat on you for me, because in terms of jobs and in terms of what's available for people around, what are you getting on that?
Well, actually, just before, and hello everybody, and sorry I was a wee bit late, but just before I get to that, there is an important thing as well. The guys are saying, I came into town again yesterday with my daughters for a bit of shopping after I picked them up from the Quailskull. And, you know, I've been training retail for 22 years, and I've lived in Boston and in cities and Dublin and whatever. And there's something very special about Nina, but there's a saying always, people buy people first, the product or service second. So it took twice as long to get through to town yesterday because of a lovely thing of stopping and chatting, the Isle Chat. And that's the thing as well that Nina is unbelievably good at, you know, and you go in, and Peter's right as well, like the pride the shopkeepers have, the amount of money's been spent, I've noticed, without talking to the shopkeepers as such, I need to compliment them on all their work, on the signage, the Christmas lights, the way that some of the some premises have moved recently, the way they've the finish they have done to their shops, but everywhere in between, like signage alone is a fortune. And I just can't believe after the year the retailers have had that they're so resilient that they're still pumping the money into.
Of course, some of that signage points towards the city of Limerick, and
I realise, sorry, I'm being facetious about it, but
I mean, some of that signage does point to Limerick, and a lot of people are pointing to their motor cars there as well to go and shopping. That can be an issue, can't it? I mean,
it can be an issue, and I suppose it's an issue why I have a foot in both camps. Yeah. When the recession hit badly, I, no more than anybody of my friends in town, had very serious commitments. Everything we had in life was structured to end by the time we reached a certain age, which is quite close. And
very, very close, Helen.
You can't be 35 years in business be of a certain age. Exactly. So the answer was, I needed a second weekend, and I went back into Limerick, and we went into Limerick in the middle of the recession.
Yeah, I remember.
Absolutely middle of the recession, but it's called taking a punt.
Yeah.
And we set up that lovely shop in there, and I love working in the city of Limerick. I love the people. I love the atmosphere. No, it's not Boston. It's not Grafton Street, but it's very real.
Yes.
It's very genuine and very real. And Nina people, no matter where you are with young people, there is an attraction to go to a city. But you live in Nina. You service all your daily needs in Nina, and you go to the city for treats. Right. And that's the way it happens.
Well, there is a responsibility on people to make sure that their own town thrives and works, isn't there? I mean,
there is. I know. Listen, at the end of the day, it depends on people's... for different reasons. Like, to be honest, I prefer to bring my daughters into Nina because it's small enough and safe enough that it's never feels that, like, around this time yesterday, nothing only positivity, not only brilliant things to see and do in this town yesterday, just from going in and out of all the different shops and buying. And you know, we still are so lucky in this town that we still have the independent shops. And I've always said this, and Peter has heard me saying this for years, Nina is a destination shopping town. We have the quality of our retail in here. Every other high street in the cities, it's all looking the same. They have the exact same shop. You could roll out. You wouldn't know where you were between here and the UK and wherever else when you look at the shops in many of the cities here. We still have the independent shops. We still have the people that, like, you know, I heard a lady yesterday going, can I put a deposit on that for Christmas? Not a bother. Nobody even blinked. You would not get that. I've told retailers, I train over in the UK, and I explain that this happens where I live, and they just don't really believe me. So to me, this is my family destination with my two young daughters coming into this town because it's safe.
But
and
for fear of us getting into a complete love-in, tell me about the availability of jobs. I mean, if there's people coming to you about that, what is the story there?
Well, so I work, as some of you may know, in a job share capacity in the job club here in town. And it's okay. The quality of the jobs has improved vastly over the last 3 years. I would call it a subtle lift. Which is good to see. And I think maybe there should be another wee drive done so business owners know about these different incentives that are available through the Department of Social Affairs and Employment, DSP anyway. But for, you know, employees, that they'll pay the first year or second 2 years of PRSI and whatever, up to 10,000 to employ someone full time. But so they're there, and there is a subtle lift. But as we said, it's a bit of a bucket though with holes in it. You cover one hole with the likes of First Data, but then of course, as you say, goes. So then that's whatever. And then, you know, O'Connor's, they, where it used to be, that's all going to be developed. And I know there's a delay
there's
now.
A hold
so
up
it's,
on it now,
it's
yeah.
It is three, yeah. I'd say three forward, two back.
Shane, you're a young guy. You've chosen to stay. You're a talented journalist. You could go anywhere. What, you chose to stay here. Why?
I suppose it's my situation. I'm very, very comfortable in what I do here. I suppose I wouldn't call it a lack of ambition, but I never actually saw myself heading to Dublin, being a national reporter, that sort of thing. I'm very much a local person, born and living in Rackhaven on the border for years, and got my first job essentially in here in Nina, work experience, and ended up here full time. So like I'm a Tipperary boy. I love my own place, and I'm very proud of it. And I suppose living in Nina for the last 7 years full time, I'm still the same. Like, and it's, again, there's no doubt about, like, you're traveling all over the country to matches on a Sunday, and you'd be in certain small towns, and like there's no doubt about it. There's something. I don't know. I find Nina is very, it's a very proactive town. Like, I know there was a lot over the roadworks and stuff over the last 2 years. A lot of the business owners were very vocal in the disruption of it. But like, that's very positive too, because it keeps, it keeps the developers on their toes. Yeah, like, and like, you don't want guys slacking and maybe the job taking another 6 months. Like, the likes of Peter and the likes of Dennis, to keep the developers honest, to make sure that once they're out in time, they're gone, and we don't want to see them back. I think there's just a couple of, a week or two maybe coming in January to tidy up, and that's about
so,
it.
So like, I so, believe, yeah. I'm just thinking, though, for guys coming out of school and maybe coming out of college and maybe wanting to come back to their own area as you did, is there room for that here? Is there?
That would be a concern, all right, for that I would have, and I suppose I'd be involved with the GAA back in my own club, and I'd be thinking, like, how, when guys go to, they're 18 and 19, they go to college and go and experience life in Dublin, Limerick, Galway, some of them would be able to go overseas, and you say, to get work experience maybe in these cities, and like, how do you get them back to Nina or to Turles or to Clonmel, where they'd be invaluable back in these areas. We need local people at the heart of keeping our locality
and local
strong.
Local people with the kind of experience you're talking about coming back as well. Do you know what I mean? Bringing back new ideas, bringing back new ways of doing things as well. You know?
Absolutely, there's no doubt about it. How we change that, I'm not sure. It's something I hadn't really I've never actually come up with the answer. How do we make our own local areas as appealing a sport, as a part of later in my own job, there's no doubt. Like, it's supposed to be where you don't really, the element of transferring is not really there, or you might have to because you end up moving to Dublin. And it's just not practical to travel back and train and stuff like that. But it's
interesting to know how important sport is, isn't it, in an infrastructure like this.
But like, there's no doubt about it. Somewhere like Tipperary potentially could suffer if we lose some of our best young people and they don't come back. You probably don't see a lot of emigration out of Limerick, Galway, Dublin, because like everything is there. Like, whereas in Tipperary,
the jobs are there.
Yeah, and like you, whereas in Tipperary, you sort of have to move.
Before we move away from this topic, do you see 2019 as being a much better, 2018 even, do you see this being a much better year, Peter?
You mean because I'm going to be 60?
This is just because you have an age problem.
Well, just to go back briefly to the point there about Seamus making about all the young people that we would like to see staying in the rural areas. 30 years ago, Shannon Development opened up workspaces. We need a new generation of workspace. Service workspace, accessible, affordable. It has to have a wonderful, excellent broadband, and it has to be available, subsidised for people for a 2-year period to start off businesses. It's a bit like putting up a bird box in your garden and facing it the right way and watching the blue tits going into it. It's no different with something. It's as simple as that. So that has to be a municipal led project. It probably won't be led by speculators and developers because they've been badly wounded and they're not into the business of subsidising anybody or anything at the moment. But it has to be led through a university campus and a local authority and some sort of benevolent development fund to make that happen, and be it an add-on to the First Data campus or something like that. Yeah. That's the answer. Now, on the issue of next year, I would be hopeful. In my own personal life, I'm probably trying to work a little bit less than 100 hours a week. You know, just to do that. Still enjoy very, very, very much what I do and what Mary and I enjoy when we work extremely honestly and hard every day to make food. And yes, we compete with Aldi, and yes, we compete with Lidl, and yes, we employ 19 staff tomorrow on Saturday, all that sort of thing, and we make food honestly and fairly. I don't want to continue working as hard as I do for the last number of years, but at the end of the day, I want to engage in the major social economic life that Nina is continuously. I want vibrancy. I don't want to meet 6 or 8 of my colleagues from the street in the morning feeling angry or feeling depressed. I want to sit down and live with these people. Mm. We live in the community. I want to sit and have a cup of coffee with positive, energetic people who are part of the life of this town in the future. But I do want our future that is not controlled by us to be facilitated by an engaging, interested and proactive local authority.
Right, and do you think, is that a possibility, do you think, or is that all sort of...
It has to be a possibility. If I there are questions today, when I walk up the street and I see that, I looked at the trees the other night and I was so happy to see the trees. I wouldn't, someday I'll write a book on the difficulties of my involvement on the trees in Kenyon Street. It deserves, a book deserves to be written on it. I would not like to think that the next generation of proactive retailers would meet the same lethargic response in the past. I feel it's better. I have confidence in the administration here. I feel they're very proactive on a jobs front. I wish that they would, I hope they will continue to be as proactive with the next generation retailers.
I'll give you the final word on this topic, Helen. Yeah, you were nodding profusely there
at times. Yes, because on that as well, we need to have the higher standard of expectation from our town. No cap in hand thinking, oh, sure, it's great wee town for what. No, we need to be on a world level. Like, I mean, high-speed broadband, exactly the kind of thing Peter was talking about. People engaging very much about the future, notions about ourselves, way beyond our belief. Because we deserve that, as in the people of Nina, Tipperary, but deserve that. But we should be on a world-class playing field, and there's no reason why we shouldn't be. But we should be looking and expecting the highest standards of living here. I don't see why we can't.
Right. The panel of Helen, Peter and Shane staying with me. We'll take a little break. We're live from Nina today, and we're back in a moment.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
Welcome back to Tip Today, and welcome back to our Friday panel as well. Shane is with us, Peter, and Helen too. And my old friend Skinner was in touch. He was hoping we would give a shout out to the Monk's Carol Singers in Thurles. They're out in force this evening on the square from 5 until 7 and again on Sunday afternoon. And they do terrific work, fundraising in Thurles. All proceeds to various local charities there. And hello to Skinner as well. Nice to hear from you today. All right, the second topic today, should the state provide life-saving medication regardless of the cost? And we had our reporter Amy out and about for us to see what the people of Tipperary think of this.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, because I mean, a life is so important. I think you should, no matter how much it costs, I think a government can never justify not paying for drugs, yeah.
No doubt about it, they should, because when people are sick, they need it.
Maybe not no matter what the cost, but certainly in a large majority of the cases, yes.
They do, yes. Because I think people are more important than the government. I think the government doesn't seem to care about anybody anymore. And I also think that it seems to be a situation that if you have some sort of a rare disease or a terminal disease, or you're elderly or you're young, the government doesn't seem to care about you. That seems to be the situation in this country at the moment. It's a sad thing to say. It's a sad reflection on society, but that's the way it is. I believe this government and successive governments, previous governments, don't seem to care about the ordinary people. It seems to be something over the last 20 years or so, and I don't know why. That's basically it.
I do. I think that there's a lot of research is needed into it, and maybe more discussions with the companies that are manufacturing the medications. That's probably where the key of the crunch is. It's an incredible amount of money, and I think these companies should be held accountable, or they're held ransom. They're holding these medications at an enormous price, and people's lives are at stake.
Yes, people can't afford it. I think, yes, it should be available.
Without question. In a life and death situation, there shouldn't be any argument, and the agenda should be there for, you know, for the government. People shouldn't have to, you know, fight to get life-saving drugs.
I think they should. I think the government should really pay for medication besides the cost, because it's more important to save lives than to save costs.
Oh, I do. I hope so. Yeah, I think they should. Why? Because there's people there that don't need to, you know, they need the help. And why not?
Would you even like to see someone dying belong to you, would you?
No, I wouldn't either.
Of course they should, no matter what the cost. The cost shouldn't mean anything for a person's life if your life is in danger.
In an ideal world, I suppose, yes. But yes, I suppose, yes.
And do you think that that's not possible now?
I don't really know. There's big money spent on a lot of things. One of the banks spent a fortune on furniture, I see today. So, you know, priorities, I suppose.
And that's the views of the people of Tipperary speaking to our own out and about reporter Amy Ryan. I suppose this all came to the fore again with the sad, tragic death of Marion Kelly, who suffered from Alpha 1, that genetic condition. She needed the drugs that she was on for 11 years, and because of financial consideration, the drug was pulled and she died within a short time afterwards. I start with you with this, Helen. There's something immoral about that, I think. Or how do you feel about that?
Sure, it's just beyond words. It's very hard to put into words. Like, I, her daughter was on here yesterday as well, and she spoke so well and so bravely and really got her message across. But at the end of the day, her mom's gone, you know, and I just can't even comprehend how she must be feeling. And nobody ever should ever be made feel like this, that in this country ever again.
Right. I have to put it to you, though, that is it possible for a government to fund every drug for every condition within an economy the size of ours?
Because of the size of our economy, I don't see why not. We're a tiny country, you know. Or what are we? The population, you'd fit most of us into Manchester.
Pharmaceutical companies are looking for astronomical amounts of money.
Well, this is the other side of it. We have a lot of the pharmaceutical companies positioned in Ireland. I'm not sure what tax rate they're on or whatever. But and it's just, and when you see, with the, do you remember a few years ago with the generic drugs that came in and they were there in place of the branded drugs and the price differential in that? And of course, I'm from the border as well, and I see a lot of people can travel over the border into our little village of Garrison, for example, and get their medication for a tenth of the price of here. So you have to, questions have to be asked about the markup of these medications.
Shane, what do you think about this? I'm sure you know the story because the family relatively local to us here.
Yeah, it's I suppose it has to come down to, I suppose, the power of our government to say how do you value your people. Like, are our government so scared of losing these jobs that they're not playing enough hardball with these pharmaceutical companies? For, like, there's no doubt about it. Like, at the end of the day, you can't expect the government to have a blank check when it comes to any area of society, because, like, the pharmaceutical companies or whatever will just, they'll just write their own check.
But my understanding of this is that the pharmaceutical companies then decided to give 6 months of the drug free to the HSE, but they couldn't come up with the money to administer the drug.
Well, in terms of this case, like, there's no defending the government. Yeah. In terms of this case, like, how a deal couldn't be put in place for 6 months. That gives us, 6 months breathing room to sort it out, to find the money. I would like to, unfortunately for Marion, and I think there's another woman in Donegal has passed away, and, like, and
so
I'm sure that there's
one person in a bad way, and of course everybody else with Alpha 1 terrified.
Absolutely.
You know.
Like, it's a thing, but I'd love to see, I'd be very, very disappointed with successive governments that there's very little backbone, I think, in a lot of the guys and ladies that are up there at the moment. Like, we're bowing down to the likes of Apple, we're bowing down to a lot of the pharmaceutical companies. We've got to take them on. Are they going to leave the country because we show a bit of backbone? I don't know. I think leaders respect leaders, and I'd like to see a small bit more from our elected representatives, particularly Simon Harris and Leo Varadkar, and on this sort of an issue.
What about yourself, Peter? I mean, of course, it's a much broader issue than the Alpha 1 patients. It involves an awful lot of various conditions around the country. Your feelings on that?
Yeah, first and foremost, my condolences to all the Kelly family and all the work and care and love that they gave their mother to mind her through the years at home, and to see it ending because of this. I think I'd be going down along Shane's line. I think I'd be going down the aggressive route. Helen mentioned there about favourable conditions for pharmaceutical companies in our country, and they are great employers, the whole lot. But I'd be going down the route of ministerial order and compulsory acquisition. I would be hitting them very, very hard. Very hard. I would have Simon Harris signing an order in the morning to make available those drugs, because in time when they do become deregulated, they will be cheap and they will be accessible at some point in the future. I would be saying under the obligations of corporate social responsibility, I would be Simon Harris picking up the phone to the CEO of that company and saying, I'm going to sign a ministerial order. You have to make that available. I'm going to compulsory acquire
that.
These
are international corporations.
Doesn't matter. We have favourable terms for them. Absolutely. Do you want to do business here? Do you know what? We have 27 friends in the EU who just showed their friendship towards us. We'll work along that. We're not on our own here in this country. We can move as a group. Do you want the favourable conditions here, or don't you? And I'd be going in with the boot. I think pussyfooting at that level with CEOs of major companies by any minister or any senior officials. It's just not there.
Yeah, I think if the public saw leadership of that quality, Helen, it would be very impressive.
Absolutely.
It?
You see, we can't have the tail wag the dog here. And it's exactly as Peter says. If you want to be in this country, you know, producing whatever they're doing, packing their product here, there is a standard in this country, and we command it and demand it, and our people deserve it. So they make an obscene amount of money, and they have to give back. End of. No more cap in hand. I don't know where, or that mentality should have been shook off a long time ago. We just can't have it anymore. We need to stand up and say enough is enough.
All right, let's take another break, and we'll be back with more from our panel in just a few moments.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
And you're very welcome back to TIP today. Now, quite a lot of texting. Let me just give you a small taste of what we're getting. It's just scandalous that if a person needs the drug, just give it to them. It shouldn't come down to money. Life is life, it says here. My God, the government have a lot to answer for. That's in from Cashel today. Hi, friend. If a government minister had Alpha 1, will they tell them that they couldn't afford to treat them? So there you go. That's Rob, who's in Carrick today. And it says, Fran, there's a massive surplus at the end of November, nearly 200 million. Buy the drugs. It's as simple as that. Nina, it says here, is a stranger's paradise. If you're a foreigner, you will get on better than if you're born in Nina. You're left behind. Better chance of getting a job if you're a blow-in, it says here. Peter, do you want to take that? Is it a foreigner's paradise in Nina?
Well, I remember years ago, a long, long time ago, at a particularly contentious referendum, dare we mention the word, and I expressed my opinion, and I was about a year open in business, and I was never short of an opinion. Whatever I had, I might have had no money.
We don't believe that a bit.
By God, had I opinions. And a man said to me in the shop, "You're only a blow-in." But anyway, I remember writing a letter to the Guardian and saying, where is it? Is
Guardian.
It the Guardian. The Guardian. Is it Ard Crony? Is it Boris O'Kane? Where's the border? And everybody that I knew in Nina from everywhere had arrived in the town. I doubt if there was anyone in the town that were seven generation reared at the foot of the castle. You know, we were all, the whole town was made up of many of us. It's on a main road, national primary route to Dublin. It's on, you know, and people move along this way. So I would say there's equal chances in Nina for everybody, but you got to get off your bum.
And you have to go out and do it for yourself, I suppose, which is the main thing.
Yeah.
All right then, let's have a listen to the people of Tipperary again, because we posed the question, is the day of the Good Samaritan dead and gone? This is what they had to say.
Well, I'd like to think I am, because I always donate at this time of the year to the Coon Sayer, and I've donated to the Lions' Club in two supermarkets last week, and I think I'm nice.
Well, I do a welfare service in Nepal, so we're helping the poor all the time. And I believe any contribution we can make, no matter how small, is some help to people. That's what I believe, anyway. We have to try and help each other, because the government or nobody else is going to care about us. Simple as that.
Yeah, I am a Good Samaritan, I think. This is my Good Samaritan Act now. I'm actually in the middle of it. I'm working Christmas Day in a HSE establishment, and I'm out here now buying a little present that we're going to wrap up for 150 patients.
That's a hard one. You'd have to ask somebody else that now. I hope so, yeah. I can do it for anyone that wants it done, yeah.
I believe I am, you know. I've obviously, we assist in overseas capacity in terms of sponsoring a child. I know everybody can't do that, but I do think, I've just helped the homeless there. I think even at this time of the year, it's not only this time of the year, but I think if people do have a bit of extra means to help less privileged people, then that should be certainly in the family agenda as well, you know.
I try my best to make other people happy, and I seen a homeless person who was carrying around all this stuff, so I felt bad and I gave him €2.
Well, I think that if you do a good deed for a person, it's a Good Samaritan, you know. If you can help people out in any way you can, let it be little or small, whatever the case may be, you know, I think that is a Good Samaritan, not to turn your back on anyone.
And are you a Good Samaritan?
I don't know. We have to ask someone else that.
I don't know, Sashi. You'd have to ask someone else that. Shane, the Good Samaritan, you know, from where you're looking, do you see Good Samaritans? Is it still out there happening?
I think it's seen a resurgence. I think during the boom, I think we lost the run of ourselves to a large extent. I think everybody became very, very self. A lot of people, sorry, I wouldn't say everybody. A lot of people became very, very self-indulgent. But I just think that the way the country has, I suppose, taken, I think, the homelessness crisis, I think everybody has been touched by that in some way or other. And it's sad in a way that, I suppose, again, going at the government, that the government is they're left to organisations such as Peter McVerry Trust, Vincent DePaul, like to support these people. But like the, in fairness, I think that a lot of the general public are getting in behind those organisations. I know if there's some of the inter-county players are putting their name to a sleep out in about 20 different locations tomorrow night. That's massive. Like you're using the power of probably the biggest sporting organisation in the country to create, I suppose, to get at those people that maybe have been sitting back and saying, this homeless thing doesn't touch me. I'll give my few bob and leave it at that. But you'll get a lot more people involved, and hopefully we'll be able to solve it over the next couple of years. But I definitely do think that, I think that I would feel that Good Samaritan is making a comeback. And I know personally myself, I just feel that you just feel an awful lot better if you're able to help somebody, even if it's just give your time. It doesn't have to be money, just give your time. Listen to somebody, anything at all you can do, it's as good for that it's as good for you as it is for the other person or group of people.
During our Vox Pop there, Helen, you were sort of posing what exactly is a Good Samaritan?
Yeah.
How do you adjudicate
that? Well, that's
that?
The thing, because we were just listening obviously to Hide the Answered, and then they obviously must have been asked, would you consider yourself a Good Samaritan? But then some people are answering what is it like? Because is it kindness? Is it being charitable? Like, define Good Samaritan then, because I think there's a bit of a blurred line there.
Mm. Well, I suppose it's what you want it to be, but I mean, one guy thought of it as, I gave €2, so therefore...
That's not a Good Samaritan, Maya. It's very nice of him to do it. It's charitable.
Right. So what is a Good Samaritan?
What's a Good Samaritan, lads? Because I'm thinking of back to, like, Bible days.
Right, well, where this came up was that a lady got onto us during the week. She spoke about six builders from the Holy Cross area and how they helped out an elderly woman. They managed to get her car out of a field that it was stuck in, and she was very appreciative of her. And that's how the whole discussion started up. People going out of their way.
Out of the way to help someone that's in a difficulty, I suppose.
Right. And suppose. Is it alive and well?
Oh, well, I talked to a gentleman yesterday who was very kind. There's a bit of work going on in the town under the radar, helping people in need for various reasons, and this guy has a trade in the town, and he was going out yesterday spending his day working in people's homes for free, and he just didn't want his name mentioned about it and stuff, and I just said, you are the kindest person and thank you so much and whatever on behalf of these people.
Right. So it is out there. What about in business, Peter? Are there Good Samaritans in business?
Oh, indeed there are. My God almighty, the amount. I was going to Dublin last week in my van to the craft fair, and I had stuff for the whole country, you know, but that's a turn. And then there's people back when I need a forklift down beside my unit, I'll get it in the scullery or something like that. That's all that are on the street, even in the street. And Nina, if I need something, I send to the pantry in 2 minutes, and I'm at another business down the road, and they come down. We have that relationship with all our businesses on the street, and there's a bit of fun involved in it. But my take on Good Samaritan is, and I think if this was the Christmas that people didn't text it, they talked. And I think if people said, a man said to me yesterday, I'm going to Florida after Christmas and holidays. He said, he was a retired man. I love it, he said, because everybody says hello to you in the shops. Yeah, and he said, I'm not going to anywhere else, the Canaries, I'm going to Florida. And I said, my God, that's a very important thing. Helen said, you buy people before you buy product. The issue really is that say hello, do a good turn. Your conscience isn't cleared before you because you put €2 in a tin. You have to say hello. You have to be genuine. Don't text your granny. Go and see her. You're very busy, I know, and granny knows you're very busy, but she's not on Facebook and she can't keep up with you. Just go and see her. Say hello. Have a minute. Have a cup of tea with somebody. And I think it's very simple things that keep people happy. And you know what? It's not a bunch of flowers sent by a courier. It's about five minutes, ten minutes, a cup of tea, and a bit of a chat. Yeah. And I know that if I spend... people that I work with and they're having a bit of bad health are people that I know, and I stand outside behind the counter genuinely and I just have a word with them and I ask them, how are they doing?
Are they getting through the day as well as buying a cake of bread? And when you have a chat with people, do you know what? You feel very good about it.
I'm sure you do.
And they walk out smiling with a wee bit of a bounce. We need that human interaction. Even if Granny's on Facebook and she has her own YouTube channel, you still need to go and see her because we need that face-to-face. It's everything. It's community. And a lot of community opportunities for people have been cut out now because, you know, the way pensions are now paid into a post office account or whatever, you don't bring the milk to the creamer anymore. You know, the local pubs are dying out and stuff. So any bit of face-to-face at all is really important.
It'll actually be an interesting, I think, is it? Experiment to do next year if some sort of day was picked in the year and so everybody in the country or many people stay off Facebook, Twitter and Snapchat. Brilliant. And see how much time you can communicate, but see how much extra time you have available and you see, you're like, God, if I wasn't on this phone the whole time, what could I do with that time? Who can I help in the local community? I just think it'd be an interesting experiment.
It wouldn't be good for Nina alone. But even on that as well, because there was stuff going on the other day and it was just organising people to do stuff and my head was melted with my phone. And then I stopped and I counted at 4:30 how many phone calls I made about one particular thing or attempted phone calls. 47.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like that was... I put the phone, I did as much as I could to help the situation and I turned off my phone and put it in the cupboard and I thought, if I don't see that phone again, because I was acutely aware for at least 15 of those phone calls, my daughters were present. Yeah, you know, and I said, give me a wee second, mummy be with you in a second. That's shocking that happened.
All right, well, there we must leave it. So thanks to Helen, to Peter and to Shane. It was great to see you all today. Have a great weekend and a happy Christmas if I don't see some of you again anyway. That's it from me. Trudy produced Owen is on the way and we'll talk to you on Monday live from the Premier Broadcast Centre. In the meantime, look after yourselves. Enjoy the weekend. Bye-bye.